This is a HeadGum Podcast. Hey everybody, it's Emily here to talk to you about Adam and Eve. Spring is in the air, but is it in your step? Is it in your bed? If you're interested in better sex starting now, go to adamandeve.com. They've got toys, lingerie, accessories, everything you need to level up your pleasure checks. And right now, Adam and Eve is offering 50% off just about any item. Plus, free shipping, which includes rush processing. That's discreet shipping, plus 100% free shipping with rush processing on your entire order. Doesn't matter how much you spend or what you buy, all will be packaged and sent discreetly, free and fast. So just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy or anything you desire. Just enter offer code PAWPAW at checkout. That's PAWPAW, P-A-W-P-A-W at adamandeve.com. This is an exclusive offer specific to this podcast, so be sure to use code PAWPAW to get your discount, 100% free shipping, and get it fast with rush processing. Code P-A-W-P-A-W. Goodbye, sweeties.
Welcome to Dungeon Court, everybody.
Dungeon Court.
I always forget what we do.
We were supposed to do a little,
dun-dun. That's what we do.
Law and order thing. Dun-dun.
Dun-dun.
I like that. Okay,
we are your Supreme Crit Justices, Murphy.
Very authoritative.
Axford. And Tanner, and then, of course, Dungeon Bailiff Jake doesn't even get his last name in there.
I've been demoted, absolutely.
You've been demoted by doing the most work on this.
The people, giving their cases to me really know it, too. They're like honorable justices and lowly Bailiff Jake.
Remember there was one that we voted against the person because they didn't ask us nicely.
Well, that's the tiebreaker.
The gavel is going to our head.
They very much have all been, may it please the court.
If they don't say may it please the court, they lose any tiebreaker. Yeah. That's the rule.
Yeah, that's the law of the land.
Yeah.
They have listened.
That's just the nature of humanity, is to create organization and then therefore get crueler for it.
Right. Okay. Court is now in session. Why don't we go ahead and throw it to Dungeon Bailiff Jake, who will give us our first case here.
Indeed. Hear ye, court is now in session.
Oh, boy.
PJE writes, may it please the court, should a broom catch on fire? The PCs recently found a broom of flying, and while using it, the wizard was hit with a lightning bolt spell. I started to narrate that the broom was ignited, as lightning bolt ignites flammable objects in the area that aren't being worn or carried.
Yeah.
The PCs argued that since the wizard was holding the broom to use it, that it was being carried, and worn or carried is meant to include items on someone's person. I argue that a broom of flying is more like a mount, and mounts are subject to AoE spells. A magical wooden broom is still a wooden broom, so it should ignite. How would the honorable justices rule?
My first thought is, if I'm that player, I'm not arguing, oh, this is being carried because I'm flying it, because I don't know that that holds water. That's like saying I'm carrying an airplane.
Carrying an airplane defense.
However, there could be a loophole with the fact that it's magic.
Sometimes magic
items behave differently than regular mundane items.
So the argument was flawed.
So I'm not weighing in either way yet. I'm just saying I don't know if I buy the he was carrying the broom. However, a magic item I bet could behave differently.
I'm going to go ahead and look at the wording of broom of flying, and I think this supports our DM here. And I will also say, this is enough within the realm of, you know, DM wiggle room that I think having a lightning spell cause a magic broom to catch on fire is completely acceptable. I think this is normal and cinematic and fun.
I like it. I also like the move. I think it's fun.
Yes.
Yeah. You got to keep it wiggly.
I also think it's fine for the players to argue with the DM, because I think arguing is fun.
I agree. I do agree with that. I'm going to agree that I like to argue, so I'm not arguing with you.
We support a healthy discourse at the table.
But I would say that there's maybe a different different angle.
Yes. So allow me to read Broom of Flying. This wooden broom.
Actually, read it into the record. I would have you read it into the record.
Oh, will you please?
Justin. Thank you so much. I'll only do it because I want to, though, because you, again, are just the bailiff. So I'm going to.
Jake, I never noticed that enormous badge that you always wear. It's so big and shiny.
Did you take the bailiff's oath?
Yeah. Yeah, we will have to come up with a bailiff's oath.
I took it by myself this morning.
Yeah, could you write your own oath? Thank you so much. Okay, broom of flying.
In a hotel bathroom mirror.
Guys, broom of flying. This wooden broom, which weighs 3 pounds, functions like a mundane broom until you stand astride it and speak its command word. It then hovers beneath you and can be ridden in the air.
Hovers beneath you, so it is not being held.
It is not being held.
However,
wielded.
And you could also look at though and say it functions like a mundane object until you speak the magic word. So now, is it a magical object, and therefore is it subject to a mundane object would catch on
it
fire?
It depends on the lightning wording, which
we'll read that into the record if you so desire. Not that I have any authority over the justice.
The lightning ignites flammable objects in the area that aren't being worn or carried. So this holds water.
Flammable objects. So it really comes down to, is a magical broom flammable? Because it's not a mundane object.
But it doesn't need to be mundane.
You don't know what the witches that made that broom were coating it with.
But we do, though. It's true. We see the item. We see what it says. It doesn't say it's immune to being burned.
Yeah, I don't think that it's covered in enamel when you speak the magic word.
Okay, right. I'm just saying it would be cool if it was.
That'd be cool.
No, definitely. And you can homebrew whatever sick shit you want your brooms to do.
Mm-hmm. The magic brooms in my world have all been rubbed with fireproof geckos.
Whoa.
Okay.
So
that's so many geckos. Do they die?
Yeah. Absolutely. It sucks they die. Essence from them. It's cruel. It's cruel.
It's a cruel process. We need to know if this was a gecko-free, cruelty-free broom or not. That should be included in the wording. Any good DM worth their salt will include whether or not geckos were destroyed.
You know, I ask for the cases to be brief. Otherwise, they probably would have included that.
Yeah. I think this is a cruelty-free broom. We have to go with
that. Bailiff Jake, could you please read back the wording? Did they say that the broom was like instantly destroyed, or did it just catch fire? Because I feel like it's definitely fair for it to catch fire, but I think that like any good play session, I think that you're going to get like a round or two to try and put out the fire while you're flying, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you saying please because you didn't have to. I started to narrate that the broom was ignited as lightning bolt ignites flammable objects. So it sounds like they said it was aflame.
Which is such a fun move to be like, oh shit, gotta get off or you're gonna take fire damage, which puts in the player's lap two fun options. One, you dismount the broom. Two, you stay on a flaming broom, taking fire damage, but not willing to give up your prime flying location.
It's such a DM versus player thing of a DM being like, you guys, tackle each other. You are hanging off the side of the cliff. Whoa, wait, I'm not hanging off the side of the cliff because technically I have boots on that say I have featherfall, and thus I cannot be hanging. And it's just like, chill. Let's just have a fun fucking action scene and let's
then
let it play out.
15 sessions ago, I picked up this razor sharp tusk. I used the tusk to act as a piton into the side of the cliff.
Instant piton as a reaction.
Roll before the DM lets you.
Now that example I kind of love though. That example of like, okay, do you remember that bit I did 10 episodes ago? Actually, it's going to come into play in a really narratively satisfying way.
I can't say no to a recurring bit serving a narrative purpose.
I do agree it would be cruel to just destroy their magic item instantly from one spell.
No, I think
but
it's
it sounds
really
like they just,
I think this sounds
they just
really
lit it
fun.
On fire. This just sounds fun.
I like what they did, and I also like, as someone who's always had spells that like light things on fire, it doesn't really get to come into play that much, so it is fun to hear a situation where it comes into play in a way that makes a character have to act differently.
Yeah. Imagine jumping from a flaming broom. It's cool as hell.
It's really cool.
So I'm going to go ahead and rule with the DM here.
I think, yes.
The court moves ever north.
Yes. I think we officially weigh that we like the spiciness of the players that they were willing to argue. We like argumentation.
Right.
But I think Murph has the way of it, which is like, you got to keep it wiggly. Like, you gotta ever keep be it the wiggly. Worm.
Yeah. I think let's move on to the sentencing phase. The players are indeed spicy. is there anything we can play into that with spiciness? Maybe they have to put out a fire with a broom because, as they say, brooms do not light on fire. What?
That's the worst sentence we've ever had. They have to put out a fire with a broom?
That's a death sentence.
No, we've killed people before. Yeah, have we not?
We do. Yeah, we have blood. No,
we've beheaded people, I believe. We've drowned people. This could be a little fire.
Yeah.
Why can't it just be a little one?
A kitchen fire?
No, a kitchen fire. That's going to be grease and stuff. Let's say.
Well, we could fully replicate the session and launch them out of a trebuchet with a broom.
Ooh.
And then light that on fire.
And then the launching process will ignite the broom.
Exactly. We'll send them to an iffy gender reveal party.
Oh, no.
With just a broom to defend themselves.
Defend themselves from the eventual...
From the eventual forest fire that breaks out.
They have to prevent a forest fire with a team of brooms.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's a disaster. That is so ordered. Our next case comes from Alex J. May it please the justices of the Supreme Crit.
But not the bailiff.
Not the bailiff. All right.
Bailiff be miffed.
Yes, and he is. I have a home game with my parents and my 91-year-old grandma around the Candlekeep mysteries. My grandmother is playing a half-elf College of Lore storytelling bard who I created a custom spell for to summon either a hero, stat block soldier guildmaster's guide, a mage, stat block apprentice wizard from Volos, or a thief, stat block nightblade from Baldur's Gate.
Cool.
However, she insists that because she's magic, she should be able to blast him with magic. I tried explaining to her.
I have to say, this is so hard because I don't have any grandparents and I would so desperately love to play with a grandparent.
She's 91.
Okay, so she thinks she should be able to blast people? Go on. Mm-hmm.
I tried explaining to her why bards are good, i.e. cutting words, bardic inspiration, and high charisma rolls. My question to you is, should I just fudge it and let her use the Eldritch Blast, or should I hold her to the rules like the rest of the party?
I am weighing in hard. I think you need to have a session with your grandma, ask her what she wants to do, and create a whole new class for her.
There's one more sentence, which is, P.S. I rolled her a new character as a reborn Hexblade Warlock with a pact to the Raven Queen for more offensive character, but she wanted to stay a bard.
Okay. Well, I think you just create a new character, create a new class, and call it a bard. She is right. Grandma is right.
Grandma does whatever she wants.
This chaotic grandma is so foreign to me and any semblance of a grandparent I've ever known.
It's almost like I think I would like fudge the rules for a grandma more than a child, even because that child, they kind of
grandma doesn't have any learning to do
shit.
Left.
Yeah. Grandma is doing her fucking victory lap.
That's right. Yeah.
91 years
let
young.
Let her be a fucking fire slinging bard.
Yeah.
Grandma can ride a dragon bard. If grandma wants to.
They didn't have games when she was a child.
There was just a ball in a cup.
That's true.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, they maybe had Parcheesi. They might have had Tiddlywinks.
Hoop and stick. They must have had a hoop and stick.
They had a hoop and stick.
Here's also my suggestion, is I really think that you should be custom making spells for her all along the way. If she says she wants to blast, give her a character sheet, and one of the things is blast.
Right. Give grandma a dice that only has 20s on it.
I just want to see grandma be like, all right, I blast him.
Yeah.
Counterpoint. Maybe you should text your grandma and explain to her why she's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, just a big block of text. Hey grandma, can we sidebar?
There's a couple Reddit threads you could refer her to if you'd like. I think give her Eldritch Blast. It's kind of just the move, right? It's like maybe secretly take away another spell if you really need to.
I think you don't need to make her overpowered, but you can.
Right, because you're still playing with your parents. Your parents still need to have fun. And if grandma's just blasting away at everything, you know, there have to be.
So funny that she's just like, no, I'm a bard.
I'm curious if she likes the sort of performer thing, because we don't really know that much about her character. So, like, is it that she likes being like a musician or a performer, in which case she doesn't have to give that up, you know? You just make her a new character sheet with abilities that align more with how she wants to fight, and she gets to keep playing her musical instrument and being a bard.
And I think even if this wasn't a grandma, even if this was just, you know,
a regular mom,
someone I didn't really like Caldwell. Right. Even if this is like...
Bailiff Jake is right there.
True. How dare I?
Get him, Justice Murphy.
there is dissent in the court. Even if this is someone I didn't like Caldwell or Jake, and they were really...
He didn't even switch it. He just added me.
Eldritch Blast isn't amazing. What makes it good later on?
No, Eldritch Blast is great.
Eldritch Blast is very good, but I feel like what makes it good later on is that the Warlock can cast it more times, right? That is why it's the Warlock's thing.
Yeah, more times, and also there's a invocation that you can add your charisma to the damage.
Exactly. Cool. So I'm saying even if this wasn't a grandma, if somebody really wanted to just be able to blast them, I think there's a fair way to give them Eldritch Blast that's not completely overpowered.
We should give all our elders Eldritch Blast. It's right in the name. If you're an elder, you get an Eldritch.
Elder Blast.
We're going to call it Elder Blast.
The Elder Blast.
We're ruling in favor of grandma. And even
I feel like though the DM is not at fault.
Still
here
need to punish.
I think they're
still
doing
need
to, it.
I'm so sorry.
The court must rule.
We must punish.
But they are bringing to
Emily,
us the exact thing.
And
they, this is unnecessarily cruel.
Stand down, Justice Axford. Stand down.
Restrain her, bailiff.
The one thing I'm allowed to do.
There absolutely must be a harsh punishment for everyone.
This is the world we live in.
This is the world we live in.
How about
this is our court?
The DM has to go to a retirement community and DM for just multiple groups of grandparents.
Oh my God, yes.
Wow, that's
a community outreach.
It's community service rather than... punishment.
Mm-hmm. We can maybe put like a scorpion in their pants too.
Yeah,
if you want to spice it up a little bit.
There will also be a scorpion.
One who lost their stinger, but they're
still
sad.
Scary.
Is it?
But they still got pinchers.
Yeah,
so they can do some damage in there. Don't worry about that.
No interest in scorpions.
Cool. Well done, bailiff. If I could speak to you privately outside,
what could it possibly be, Justice?
The other justices are conspiring against me.
I've conspired against no one. In fact, I want to put it out there that I'm willing to turn ever since Murph went in on this nice DM. I'll turn on him.
Bailiff, the time has come for you to choose. Who do you stand with?
I have no authority in the court, sir.
Yes, but what if I were to give you authority? A shiny gavel of your own.
Wow, a coup. Yes, yes. Just tell me who I must
remain.
No
need to act upon these words just yet. Just dwell on them. Dwell on them, and then when the moment is right, you will know to ascend. Now let us return.
You're going to get yourself demoted to bailiff if you're not careful.
Since when is it demotion?
That's a lot of work. You have to read all the cases.
This was happening outside the court. We were taking a recess. You didn't hear this.
All right. Sydney O. writes,
good
may
name.
It please the court. I have created a sorcerer-fighter combo for a very high-level campaign, five levels of Clockwork Soul Sorcerer and 13 levels of Psy Warrior Fighter.
Woo!
I took the dual-wielder feat, and my fighting style of choice is two weapons fighting. One of the other players has argued that I am only allowed to attack with my offhand once every turn, even though I have two battle axes equipped, and this is not how my table has played dual wielders in the past, i.e. a rogue using two knives. Do I only get one attack with my offhand, or is it two? My DM and I haven't been able to find anything in the rules about it.
Okay, this is something I've actually looked into extensively, specifically for an incredibly similar build, except it was a Battlemaster Divine Soul, and I have no answer. I cannot, I don't understand it.
I think it's...
I don't understand dual wielding.
I think it's
a
bonus action attack. Yeah, I think you just attack once.
Well, this is specifically the dual wielding like fighting style, right?
Dual wielding feet.
The dual wielding feet, I believe... and we can look all this up.
I think dual wielder feet might just let you dual wield better abilities.
It lets you add your modifier because normally, because anybody can hold a finesse weapon in their offhand and make a bonus action attack, but you do not add anything to it normally.
Okay.
You just like a short sword would just be a D6. But if you have four decks, for instance, you could do D6 plus four if you have the dual wielder feet.
So I'll read it right now. You gain plus one bonus to AC while you're wielding a separate melee weapon in each hand. You can use two weapon fighting even when the one-handed melee weapons you're wielding aren't light. So it's like better weapons.
Okay.
So yeah, I kind of think that you might be right. It's just a bonus action.
Are we about to disagree with the entire table and their rules? Because like this seems like previously the table has stated that dual wielding is fine, but we're about to establish a new paradigm for them.
Player's calling it out, which like I kind of don't like that.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. He's grimacing.
I'm grimacing. I don't like it when people tell on their other players. But I mean. When I hear it, I just like imagine somebody being like, teacher, wait, they're actually not allowed to do that. When the real answer is probably them just being like, oh, are you sure you're allowed to do this many attacks? I'm pretty sure it's just the one, which doesn't, you know, you don't have to be.
It's probably not a big deal.
There's just so many rules is the thing. So it's like so easy to be wrong. So I don't know. I personally always appreciate it when someone tells me I'm wrong.
I think that it might just be a bonus action because I think I've looked into this extensively, specifically trying to figure out how to get four attacks with weapons.
Yeah.
And I've yet to find a obvious way.
I will admit out of character that I'm not 100% on this, but as Justice Murphy, I know this for a fact. I think it's bonus action is your offhand. So even with Jens, when he got two attacks, that doesn't mean I got four attacks. That meant with my action, I can do two attacks with my main hand and then an attack with my offhand.
Right.
But which, like, I've tried so hard to make a two-weapon character just because it's so visually cool, but it always just falls a little short
for me. The plus one AC for two-weapon fighting and then the dual wielder feet.
You have to take a feat to do that. Yeah, that's
true.
I mean, it's definitely good, but I'm saying, like,
three attacks instead of two.
A lot of times, I mean, I don't take feats until way later because...
Yeah.
You got to boost those stats.
There's got to be a way. I love, Emily, I love like the way that you approach these things, though, where like it's like you're trying to solve some sort of like equation that will like help space travel be possible. Where you're like, I got to crack this.
I'm sure someone will be like, Emily, you can just do this, this, and this. I just didn't look at it from that angle. But I have been like looking into like, oh, it'd be so cool to have a weapon in both hands. And specifically, dual wielder does let you hold like cooler things like this character is awesome. They're fucking
two
carrying
axes?
Two axes.
Yeah,
that's
that
looks
fucking real good.
But I just haven't figured out a way to like make it.
I think what we need to do is we need to write all of this information on a chalkboard and then like leave like a blank space where
it's
just
for
like
Matt Damon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Actually, Matt Damon was just a lowly janitor in that movie. So, you know, someone with a low level position, hiding their genius. And rising to the top.
Didn't Harvey Weinstein fund that movie?
Well, you know, it wasn't.
You know what?
Okay.
That's not fair.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a cheap shot, Murph.
Canon, Jake loves Weinstein.
I didn't even say I liked the movie. I just described the plot.
How dare you describe the plot of that movie, sir?
Implicit.
On all counts. I think unfortunately offhand is just bonus action.
With a heavy heart we must rule
in favor of the person who told
you. I'm open to being fucking wrong.
I'm not open to being wrong. I sentence you. Well, if we're all on the same side, we simply have to sentence them.
Okay, I'm gonna sentence them to their weapons get so sick and awesome that they're too heavy to carry.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
But they look awesome. They look so good.
Two big Cloud Strife sized axes.
You have to do a strength check every time you use them.
So ordered. The Green Magus writes, "May it please the court, I humbly bring before you a case of DMV players. Can a DM, myself, require multiclassing? Only that they multiclass and not to a specific class. The goal, create richer, more thematic characters that can narratively grow. My players argue that by forcing multiclassing, I am stripping them of their most powerful abilities. Mm. I humbly await your judgment."
I get what they're doing. I think it's a cool idea, but I think once you bring it to the table and they're like, "We don't want to do that," it's crazy to force the issue.
I think when it comes down to it, creativity comes from a place of freedom. And so if you want the richest, most interesting characters, it's going to be from an authentic place and it's going to be from what they want to play.
It's like the noblest intentions being rejected and you like still can't process it. You're just like, no, I need to hammer this home.
People always say that I multi-class all the time, and I do for this precise reason. I 100% agree with you. However, I'm also aware that that's my personal preference.
I've definitely heard of, there's a couple of campaigns. I think there's a show, Bombarded, and I'm not 100% how they run the game, but I think they're all multi-classed with Bard. If it's not that show, then it's a different one. But there are people out there that use this as kind of a hook, which I think is a really fun hook.
Yeah,
is to, you know, add multiclassing into it because it is interesting. But again, if you bring it to the table and they're like, "No, I just want to be a fighter," I don't think I don't think anyone's gonna have fun if you're like, "No, you must have a richer character.
You must take a level of rogue."
I think, like, I don't know. Yeah, I love this idea, though. And I feel like it's the sort of thing that you have to, like, offer at the table specifically. It can't be, like, something that you've prepared with this grand design. It's got to be something that, like, comes up a little more naturally. Like, if a character, you know, is, like, losing the will to fight or something, and, like, they take a level of rogue because they're, like, learning a new way to fight or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, playing it at the table and letting it come up like that seems like the way to go.
I was going
to
say, I think you can bait them, right? It's like they meet interesting characters who, like, if it's a fighter, they meet a cool rogue who fights in a really interesting way, or they go to a thieves guild and they have an opportunity to train, or like, you know, like they meet some like infernal but cool god and they have an opportunity to take some warlock level. So it's like, I think that you dangle it rather than enforce it.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, your players, they don't know what they want. They think they know what they want, but they don't. You got to bait them. You got to give them the tasty little carrots.
I think they do know what they want, and you can
know what they want. They want candy. That's what they think they want, but they're gonna get sick. Those little babies.
I disagree with this. They do know what they want. I'm saying give them the opportunity to make the choice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to be with the DM on this because, like, I love, as a DM, I love like planning too much and like just having like a cool idea. There's nothing better than like having a cool idea and getting really excited about it. But you gotta let your players. You gotta let your players take the reins a little bit.
It's a weird, like upfront demand to be like, "I need you guys to have really cool narrative arcs." When like it's just starting. Those things like happen on their own.
But also, I would bet it's a situation where the players maybe don't have as much experience as the DM, which I think happens a lot. Which as a DM. Mm. You know the game kind of inside and out. So and you know, they listen to NADPOD and maybe they listen to other shows. So they've seen fighters go to level 20. They've seen barbarians go to level 20. They've seen all these things. So they're like, "I need something fresh and new." And the players are like, "I just want to make this really powerful.
I just want three attacks."
Yeah, I just want to get three attacks as fast as possible.
And there's nothing better than looking at like the sheet or like the description of your character in the book and being like, "Oh man, at this level I get this, at this level I get this," and just like dreaming about it. It's very fun.
And especially also, for, like, once they get those three attacks, then it might be easier to like present options for them to multi-class, and they'll be like, "You know what? I've reached the level I've been trying to reach. Mm-hmm. Now I'm open to it." You know?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's like when Pikachu had to fight Raichu in that episode of Pokemon, and Raichu was a stronger electric type Pokemon, but Pikachu could learn Quick Attack, and Raichu couldn't because Raichu evolved too quickly. So it's like you got to put them up against someone that's stronger than them so that they realize that like there's multiple ways to advance rather than just straight up leveling.
Is this the moment, Justice Caldwell?
We sentenced you to having to listen to Caldwell talk about episodes of Pokemon.
In a whisper while he puts his baby to bed.
Come, let me tell you about the time they played baseball with Team Rocket.
I didn't know there was one called Raichu. That's good.
Hey there, Nadpoles. This episode is brought to you by Aura Frames. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Well, look no further. Aura Frames are the beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. My mom, my mother-in-law, and my grandmother-in-law all have Auras from me, and they love them. So from grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, and even the friends in your life, every mom loves an Aura frame, named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. Trademark, brother. Aura frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages. They're easy to set up. They are the perfect gift, and they've got unlimited storage, unlimited photos and videos. You can invite as many people as you want to a frame. There are absolutely no hidden fees or subscriptions. How beautiful is that? And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That is Aura, A-U-R-A, Frames.com. Use the code PAWPAW at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Thank you, everybody.
Howdy, Nadpoles. Caldwell here with a very important question. Do you like spending money? I sure do. Every time I give away my money, chances are good I'm going to get something I want in return. It's a pretty sweet deal. But sometimes I find myself paying for things I'm not even using. And when that happens, I end up having less money in my bank to spend on things I do want. Ridiculous, right? Luckily, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/pawpaw. That is rocketmoney.com/pawpaw. One more time, that's rocketmoney.com/pawpaw. That's it for me. Thanks for listening and happy savings.
Okay, now I have a final update from Taruk.
Oh God!
I love
the
I
saga
love.
Continues.
It's
I love.
I gotta warn you guys up front. That Taruk kind of goes out with a whimper, which it's so
alas.
But it's nice to bring it all home.
Yeah.
Paul H. writes, "Lords and ladies and everyone of the court, I stand before you with the end of the Taruk the Tiefling saga."
The end?
The end. After I became DM again, we scheduled another session. I was hyped, I planned all week, and I thought I came up with some pretty good stuff. Then it was the day. I showed up early and got all set up. Taruk was running a bit late, so he wasn't home quite yet. When he got home, all he said was, "Oh, did I not tell you guys? I quit. I'm not playing anymore." Then he left his own house. I still see him weekly, but he refuses to acknowledge his quitting. It's just weird tension now. There is no case I just wanted to let you guys know the conclusion of the saga.
Oh my God.
Okay, once
left
again,
his own house?
Once
salt
again,
the earth.
The story of Taruk, he is like an uncomfortable, depressing short film.
This is every like
wild.
Every time it can like take on a different direction, it's just like he just, I don't know. he limbos under the bar.
There's no bigger power move than leaving your own house.
That's what I was gonna say. Shout out to Paul H, who has consistently made sure to point out the funniest details in every single update.
I know.
Big time.
If he just said he left, it wouldn't be nearly as funny. But leaving his own house.
He left his own house.
But this, my guess is that this dude maybe lives at home and it's his, and his dad is the father-in-law. Because remember, because this is him playing with his brother-in-law and his father-in-law.
I love that we're having to piece together
just
this
being
family
left at
tree.
The table with your father-in-law. You're just sitting there. It's like, oh, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's
I
just
also
us.
Love that there's like no explanation for this dude's behavior, because I feel like.
Also, we only know him by his character's name.
And I feel like if I like was playing D&D with like your dad and your brother, and your brother was like insane, me and your dad would be like, what are you doing?
Yes!
Like, there would be like, you know, we would be like, let's acknowledge that this is strange.
I just need to know, where did Taruk go? Because like, D&D takes a long time. It's not like he just like went and sat in the Wendy's parking lot, or maybe he did for 4 hours.
I think he took a long, aimless walk and like worked out some stuff.
He just shadow boxed around the block.
He's just like nursing a little egg of despair.
I want to think that he went around, like ran around the block in like a Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook trash bag jumper.
He could have run a marathon in the time it takes to run a session.
I just like went and like took like a wood axe to cinder blocks or something in the backyard.
It's really just a kid taking his toys and going home.
Yep. I'm like, I'm very sorry for you, Paul H. However, you clearly have a sense of humor about it, because it's every update is
totally.
And
really
this saga
it.
Has brought us and a lot of people joy. So.
It's always baffling to me, because Paul, the way Paul is writing, I'm like, I could be friends with them, and this, and yet. Paul is very nice about the whole Taruk situation. When I hear it, I'm like, this person is a fucking nightmare. I don't know how you even have dinner with them. It's insane.
Paul is always like, I was hyped. I was excited.
Yes,
I thought it was going to be good.
Bless
like,
Paul.
Bless Paul,
because I really think he is like handling the situation of having a weird like sibling-in-law with grace.
Good Lord.
Do y'all think that we could fix Taruk?
No.
Like us four? Like, could we go in there and just like whip him into shape? Could we be like the queer eye for D&D
Should
players?
We have, yeah, we could have Taruk do a guest arc. Like,
I feel like there are just like maybe better people to save in this world.
Yeah. I think this is strange, because this is just an update, but I think we need to sentence Taruk.
Again.
Yeah, I sentence him to eternally run laps in a Bradley
just never
Cooper
allowed,
garbage suit.
You must leave your home forever.
Go on a long, long run.
You must remodel an entire room of your house specifically for D&D, but you are not allowed to play in it.
Ooh, that's good too.
That's cool.
A forbidden game room in your own home.
Brutal. Having to do like housework and not benefit from it. Oh, that just like really hit something personal inside.
Yeah, it's just very funny to picture like, hi, come on over. Oh, this is the deck I put in. I'm not allowed on.
Yeah, I'm just like thinking of all the fucking mulching I do in my front yard. And if it was just like, cool, you mulch it and then it disappears.
Yeah. I was cruel to a witch, and now I'm not allowed to use my deck.
Okay. Dan R. writes, may it please the court. My players were fighting several demons in a small underground room. Our bard used conjure animals to summon four...
I'm so sorry. I just got really distracted by something.
What?
And I can't even listen to what you're saying.
What is he distracted by?
It's so stupid. But I just was like, you know what? I should have sentenced Taruk to get blasted by the grandma. And then I was like, I heard the word conjure, and I was like, fuck, this relates to a case. I'm supposed to listen.
Grandma Connelly does have Taruk energy.
That's what I'm saying, and it would be really funny. That's who needs to whip Taruk into shape.
Yeah. Can we make the grandma our executioner?
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
She can blast Taruk.
I'm so sorry. Go on.
No, that was a worthy interruption.
Definitely.
So Dan writes, may it please the court, my players were fighting several demons in a small underground room. Our bard used conjure animals to summon four Huang Harasek, huge-sized snails. I warned him that this was a pretty small room, and he said he still wanted to do it. I described these huge snails as appearing and that stretched from floor to ceiling and blocked the PCs from the monsters. Basically, no one could do anything because all of the room was full of giant snails.
Snail wall.
The player was mad that I let him cast the spell if it basically meant they couldn't do anything until they dispelled it. Was that a fair criticism, or was my warning of it being a small room enough?
I feel like these players weren't thinking creatively enough. Like, you created a snail wall fortress. You can, like, short rest and get your shit back and then be ready to take on these monsters. Like, you've improvised an incredible spell called snail wall, or as I'm calling it now, snall.
And once they go away, then you have slime moat.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
That's difficult terrain.
We're big snails fans on this show.
In every
Except
form.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think anytime you do the wink, wink, I don't think this is a good idea, and then the player does it anyway, they're just asking for trouble.
It's also like, but usually things are being like a bad idea are like, oh, this could go wrong. This was just like absolutely nothing happened.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
If anything, it's like it's not funny. Like instead of it being you like warned them, and instead of it having dire consequences, it just had a silly consequence.
I feel like the thing is, like, you know that you were doing this to, like, punish your player. Like, your player's getting mad. It makes sense, because I feel like this DM knew what they were doing. Like, you didn't just, like, make this snail wall appear and have it not work out of, like, you know, this is just what would happen. Like, you...
It's just classic D&D, though, because, like, I'm just picturing the scene, and, like, it's just a beautiful anticlimactic moment where you, like, summon these giant snails, and then all of a sudden you've just got, like, this, like, fortress of snails around you, and you just light a campfire, and you have, like, a nice little, like, heart-to-heart as these, like, snails tower above you.
Or you're, like, pressed up against the cave wall.
Yeah.
It is a really funny thing. However, I also can see Conjure Animals, I think, is a decent level spell, and it could have been this person's highest level slot. So it could be like, fuck, that's my only third or fourth level spell. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what? Here, okay, I'm like trying to be really diplomatic here. So that's why I'm like not just like gut reaction being like, yeah, you did your work. The only thing I would say is that like maybe because when you play Theater of the Mind, saying it's a small room, like maybe in the future you should be like, it's a X by X room. Like if you know what the dimensions are, then like maybe you should tell them so that then they can.
I think though with Conjure Animals, they did not need to summon giant snails. You know what I mean?
It's true. Yeah.
Like you didn't need to do that. There are other animals.
It definitely sounds like specifically the DM warned them after they said, "I summon giant snails."
Yeah, you know what this sounds like? This sounds like somebody tried to do a Looney Tunes Space Jam dunk, and then this DM just came out and just stuffed the ball back in their face in a very funny way.
Just somebody taking a katana to Michael Jordan's arm halfway through the space.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's how the movie
should
have ended.
I was going to say, like, oh, maybe they could have tried to, like, summon them on top of them, but it is unoccupied space. So.
Wait, Emily, I have a follow up question. Can you unsummon specific animals from the Conjure Animals?
Oh, like, can you, if you summoned two, could you, like, unsummon one of them?
Yeah, so you have, like, snail cover.
That would probably be, like, a DM's choice. Like, can you control it that way?
Yeah, because if you've got this snall, then and you like dissolve
snail
part
wall,
of the
right.
snall,
oh,
and
the
then
snall.
All of a sudden, like yeah, then you can like use like the snall as like
it's
cover,
like,
yeah,
like almost like balustrades or whatever those things are called that people shoot arrows through.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Or like you could kind of like stand right next to part of the snall, dissolve it, and try and get a surprise round because I don't think that the monsters are going to be expecting the snall to partially dissolve.
The snall dissolve.
I think that especially considering that the consequences of this were just that it fills up the room, I think you could have maybe done an arcana check or something to have them like try to control it. That way they kind of understand the stakes of it as it's happening. That being said, you warned them and all you did against them was like waste a turn. So it's just not that big a deal.
Well, yeah. But also wasting maybe this person's only third level spell slot, depending what level they are.
But the DM said, wink, wink, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
And then they did it and then it was a bad idea. So
the DM gave the wink.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, must... no, I do agree with that. Mm-hmm. I do agree.
You must
with that.
Heed the wink.
Heed the wink. Wink. Yeah.
Heed the wink.
So we're going to go ahead and sentence this player.
Death by snails.
Blasted by grandma.
It's going to get blasted by grandma into a pit of snails.
We can't use the grandma for every kiss.
We can for the
it's
rest of this
I
episode,
all I
want to
do
sir.
Now.
She come must here, rest. Emily, she's so tired.
You know what? Let's do one last one.
Grandma's
I'm a
blast
bard
him.
And I'm going to blast
you. Let's do one last one here.
Nathaniel okay. D writes, I'm in a campaign right now, and we were in a cave that had a white dragon in it. My character is a barbarian, and the sorcerer in our party polymorphed me into a giant ape. The ceiling was like 60 feet in the air. I was able to climb up the wall to the ceiling where the dragon was hanging from.
Whoa.
I successfully drappled the dragon.
Okay. Drapple is all a right. dragon grapple.
Yeah, yeah, he drappled.
I got one fucking job as the bailiff. I successfully yes. grappled the dragon, but the DM wouldn't let me body slam the dragon because of his ability to fly. I think that's dumb because I don't think a dragon could fly with a huge creature on its back. Thoughts, judges? Also, I was holding the dragon by the neck.
That's a strength check. That's at least
yeah,
some sort
on.
Of check,
yeah,
right?
You can fucking body slam someone that flies. In fact, you mm-hmm. can. That's like how you kill a fly is essentially body slamming them with your hand.
It's grappled.
This is Kong rules, baby.
It's grappled, so its speed it's zero. So it has the ability to fly, but it can't fly at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Ooh, like, yeah. That's a really good call.
Yeah, it's
if you grapple
zero,
a dragon, their
grapple.
Speed is zero.
You could do straight up. I'm just going to describe all the cool body slams that you could do from the top of the game. I'm going to say tombstone pile driver, right?
Whoa.
I'm going to say you have it by the neck, flip it around, grab it around the waist, you drive it, ape holding dragon, you are the Undertaker, this is Kane, it is the late 90s, fire all around you, slam down
your parents
in the
love
middle
you.
Of
your
the
parents
ring.
Love you.
Your parents love you. They're not disappointed in you for watching wrestling.
He's going for the drapple. Oh, I can't believe it.
Oh, also, what am I thinking? Holding the dragon by the neck. This is chokeslam territory, baby. This is
whoa,
chokeslam.
Yeah.
This is Undertaker throwing mankind through the top of the steel cage in Hell in a Cell.
I feel like I know what the punishment is going to be. I just...
This DM is going to be facing the Undertaker at SummerSlam. He's coming out of retirement, people.
It's not possible.
The dead man rides again. Oh, and who's that? That's got to be Kane.
I don't believe this.
It's Kane.
In all my years of commentating, I've never seen anything like it.
You have to face Kane and the Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match.
I disagree with how this DM ruled it, but I admire their willingness to like be a stickler. Because like if I were a DMing and presented with this scenario, I would absolutely be like, oh yeah, you choke the dragon and suplex it because that's cool as hell. And like, who am I to stand in your way? I would fold like paper before this brilliant maneuver.
But I also think that they. But I also think what Murph said is I think that the player was straight up right. If they're grappled, a grappled creature has zero speed. I think if you have zero speed, you can't fly.
Yeah, I think
you can misty
the
step out of a grapple, but I don't think that you can fly out of a grapple.
Nope.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Unless the dragon had really cold hands, because it is an ice dragon, and it like touched the gorilla's chest, and the gorilla. Got a little chilly, and that might have thrown the gorilla off. So I think that that's a viable ruling, but no, I think that the speed is going to be zero. Yeah. I'm saying even if like the rules weren't on the player's side, I feel like I would still allow the player to do this because it's dope as
it's
hell.
It's just the right thing
so
to
cool.
do.
Yeah. So you'll be facing the Undertaker, or no, you will not be facing them. You will get front row seats.
Fuck.
You'll be sitting with us. The TV. This is real. All of us, we're going to SummerSlam and we're going to sit.
Oh my God.
Front row seats?
Front row seats.
This is so awesome. Great.
Front row seats to SummerSlam?
I might get on TV.
I didn't get vaccinated for nothing.
Yeah. and then your DM is going to have to face Undertaker and Kane. And they're gonna, wow. You know what? They're gonna fight for real. It's gonna
That's
be
fucking awesome. We don't often give out the punishment and a prize. This player is getting a goddamn prize.
Especially because we, the justices and bailiff, got to benefit from the prize as well.
Yeah,
this sounds like the best birthday party we could ever give Murph, which is so, that we take him to SummerSlam.
It's also funny because it's not WrestleMania, it's SummerSlam. Like, if you guys took me to SummerSlam, I'd be like, that's pretty cool, I guess.
It's not WrestleMania.
Oh my gosh.
We got you that SummerSlam you wanted, honey.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you kept talking about a slam. So right? I booked the first one I saw.
No, this is good. This is probably the third or fourth best pay per view.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you get for your 36th birthday. Yeah. You know? Like, it's not a big birthday.
Yeah, that's true.
How momentous.
You know what? I'm going to say it's the third best pay per view. I'd be plenty happy. You know what? We should actually go to SummerSlam.
You look so petulant right now.
Fuck, I want to go to SummerSlam.
No, I'm not petulant. I'm furrowing like, my brow thinking if I will be allowed to go to SummerSlam. Good. And I think
I was having that thought while we were having
where is SummerSlam?
Cool, it is. The court has decided we're going to SummerSlam. And with that, I think we're going to go ahead and end this one. Thank you, Dungeon Bailiff Jake. Thank you to everybody for submitting their questions. Court is adjourned. You can listen to, well, actually, no, court is in recess. You can head on over to
put the robe back on.
Patreon.com. The robe is halfway off, now back on. I can go on over to patreon.com/nadpod. That's NADDPOD. Don't sing yet. To listen to bonus cases. We're gonna be doing some more D&D court over there as our short rest this week. In the meantime, does anybody else have anything they'd like to plug?
I have one thing I'd like to plug. We talked about wrestling, I wanted to plug the person whose YouTube channel you watch all the time.
Murph. Wrestling bios? Check out Wrestling Bios. I've been watching
Murph
their...
like always watches it when he has lunch, and it's really, really cute.
Yes. Wrestling Bios is great. I'm currently watching his series where he goes back and watches every Monday Nitro and every Monday Night Raw and compares them back to back when they were airing the same time and is rating them on which one is better and which one is worse and just goes through every single match. And I'm on like episode 20 or something like that. So definitely check that out, everybody.
Wow. What a backlog.
Sweet. Yes. Check out Wrestling Bios. Court is in recess for now. Check us out on Patreon. You can follow us on various social media that we use or don't use. At CH Murph is me, at Caldy's Caldwell, at Astro's Emily, at Jake Hurwitz is Jake. And you can tweet about the show using hashtag NADPOD. That's NADDPOD.
We are the youth of the nation.
It's the end of the show, everyone, and you know what that means. We've got to shout out our beautiful, benevolent Council of Elders, starting with Brad D., Jeffrey S., Haldor Frostback, Steelbreaker, and Matt M., members of the Bailiffs Union who have been dispatched to investigate working conditions at the Supreme Crit after someone anonymously filed several hundred complaints against the three justices. Jordan DJ, Cutter W., Jibe G., Zolo Dolo, and Dylan B., a council of witches who finally perfected a fireproof broom. Unfortunately, it requires broom and rider to be completely encased in a bubble of water, but hey, progress is progress. Schubert the Mushroom, Danielle the Dastardly Dame, Andrew M., Beardman Dan, and Scott D., the Disciples of Taruk. These chaotic players have taken the tyrannical tiefling's words to heart and attempted to mutiny their DMs. Unfortunately, none of them were successful, and now as punishment, they must leave their own homes and linger in a Burger King parking lot in shame. Danny P., mixologist Michael McD., Victor T., Balnor's boy, Andrew B., and Kevin S., polymorphing wrestlers who compete annually in a no-holes-barred cage match known as We Fought a Zoo. Justin I., Ragnar Fairdwind, TJM the Gnome Barbarian, Elena M., and Trele the Crayfay, a team of debate bards who have perfected a new spell called Blaming Sphere, the rules of which are written in a purposefully confusing way so as to bait your opponents into arguing. Jared E., Austin Bonesaw MR, Daniel R., and cyborg version of Josh the Kobold, cave critters who watched the epic showdown between the giant ape and the ice dragon. Unfortunately, they were seated in the crash zone and were crushed almost instantly. Octolich, Gage M., Richard X Machina, Michael L., and Sergio Salazar Solomon Zacharias de Sequani. Oh, that's always a fun one to come back to. A group of elderly D&D players who all get together in their retirement community to play once a week. There's no joke here. I just thought old people playing D&D was a nice mental image, and turns out I was right. Trust the Traveler, Sir Carl, Jory S., Dana G., Azoth Shadows, Callum L., and Ryan. The Supreme Crits Execution Squad, who are currently out of a job due to the rise of Eldritch Blasting Grandma. Luckily, they were all hired by Bailiff Hurwitz for some unknown reason. Just what is he planning? Jack L., Flawless Whale, Temporal, Sam L., Nicholas C., and Reese N.S., bailiffs who meet up with Jake for a bailiff happy hour every week and listen to him complain loudly and without restraint about Emily Caldwell and Merv. Samuel B., Mike H., Matthew E., Colton B., Adam G., and Mateo C., champions from the WWE plane, a plane of existence filled with buff heroes that can only be reached by super tall and super unstable ladders. Nabadger, Panama James, Cummins the Bard, Adrian the Halfling Bard, and Dan, the Blasting Grandmas. They're actually not a D&D group, just a college a cappella group. No one knows what the name is a reference to due to the high turnover rate of college a cappella groups. Nikki W., Grace G., Drew Nasty, Cece Lulu, and Jay, an eldritch demon lord who gifts their dark curses only to the elderly. Their devotees are super sinewy and don't take no guff. Barnzenator, Michelle O., Timmy R., Jonathan W., the croc-wearing warrior, and Lucas B., Taruk's new D&D group. So far, Taruk has gotten two of them killed, stolen the bag of holding, and multiclassed into rogue because nobody freaking gets me. Aaron S., Kevin M., Hogfish's Above Average Hog, New York, and Stephen C., the Council for Ordinary Broom Awareness, a group formed to spread the idea that not every broom is magical and therefore does not need to be mounted and giddy-upped. In fact, some are magical, but they do stuff like magically clean up spilled milk, not fly. KJ, Michael M., Raul N., Mike K., Maxwell C., and Karen J., the Tampa Tourism Bureau, who have politely requested we stop calling them every day to ask whether SummerSlam is going to be there or not. Nick W., Taylor A., Matthew R., Esme M., and Spartagnus, Lightning Bolt Firefighters. Turns out lightning fires are like grease fires, and you need a really big metal lid to put them out. Nathan, Casimir the All-Knowing, Big Bad Beardo the Mad, Eric M., and Jack Mehoff, Hollywood producers who are bringing the Taruk Sage to life in an upcoming movie tentatively titled Turning the Tables. Bradley Cooper is set to star and has been personally ruining D&D games across the country as practice for the role. Burley T., Nero Claudius Caesar Augustus Germanicus, Christian A., J. Dragonborn, Joro the Unapropro, and Cody B., the makeup and special effects crew responsible for transforming Bradley Cooper into Taruk. Apparently, he loved the look so much, he demanded the horns be made extra durable so he could sleep and shower in them. Liam D., the Sandrean, Ben A., Feldanus, Dave H., and Koala Bear. actors starring alongside Bradley Cooper in Turning the Tables. Liam D plays Taruk's brother-in-law, and Feldonis plays Taruk's father, while Sandrayan, David H., and Koala Bear play Wendy's employees who listen to Taruk rant about how unfair his defeat was. Catherine S., David K., Christian S., Dustin S., Keith K., The Time Walker, and Emilio D., D&D players who personally had their games ruined by Bradley Cooper. At first, they didn't know it was him because he was wearing full tiefling makeup at the time, and even after they found out, it was still a little weird. Frankie Koala, Big Bad John, Aston S., Blair the Bug Blair Barbarian, and Porkchop. Bradley Cooper's entourage. All of them have started sporting tiefling horns too. Now, I'm no fashionista, but I think that horns might just be this summer's hot new look. We'll see though. Chanel M., Alice, Minette F., Pat L., Achutha A., and Lauren H. Social media stars who are all rocking horns now. That's right, folks. Hashtag horny summer is officially underway. Elias Hawthorne, Maddie Y., Alex H., the eldest Barry, Ryan S., and the Bone Duster. Concerned parents making a stand against hashtag horny summer, and not because of the body modification and demonic influences either. They just think Bradley Cooper's a bit overrated. Joshua H., Rubik Crisp, Idrassel, Brindley C., Micah B., and Ploops. A team of kobold fighters who fight for the white dragon. They've spent the last decades assembling a massive horde of folding chairs to be used just for this occasion. Carly Ann, Lori P., Connor Savage, Russell H., Christopher J.O., Logan S., and Leviathan, Taruk's buddies. They're all hanging in a friend's backyard and told them to come by. So they're who you can thank for Taruk's abrupt departure. Demi A., BioQuirt 7, Kenny, Remington CD, Amber K., and Everett P., owners of an inflammable broom. It's actually a Swiffer. Yes, it doesn't look quite as classic, but it's safe as hell. Trub Hop Drapper, Jesse DLR, the Element God, Lindsay W., Champ Wild, and Valen, valiant knights who were all soundly defeated by a magic blastin' grandma. Trub is the first to admit that it was their great honor to be defeated by such a hero. Sprite Pepsi, Carlin C., Anthony S., Sally S., and Tristan C. the Goose. The Supreme Crit's other bailiffs. Hopefully they all work in a courtroom where the bailiff is treated with a little more respect. Jake, Emily S., the new petty king of Outerboro, Sassy, Matthew J., Scrip Scripper, and Zane C., medium-sized snails who heard Dan's case and are livid they weren't called in to help. In a small room, you absolutely must employ the support of not large, but heroic medium-sized snails. Long live snails. Michael S., the Bone Duster, Noah, Wyatt B., Estelle, Lyle Thorndrick, and Rogue Cree, barbarians who wrestled a white dragon at SummerSlam. Rogue Cree gave the dragon a rock bottom. It was epic. Daniel N., Joseph H., Baron S., Mr. Dude Sky, Conflicted DM, and Justin LB. Players, judges who sit in a lower courtroom that unanimously ruled that PJ's broom should not have caught fire. Thankfully, it was appealed and justice was restored. Connor P., Dandy, Jennifer R., Clifton A., Reverend Chatterbones, and Richard G., Alex J.'s distant cousins who are all amped for this year's family reunion. They all just want to study the game under the most optimized D&D player of all time, Magic Blasting Grandma. M. Barber, Marcos P., and Pup Kalish, quadruple wielder fighters. They fight with two battle axes and also wear ice skates on their feet and get two kick attacks each turn. Take that, Sydney O's DM. And that's it. We're wrapping it up right there with a big old pretty bow. Love y'all. You're too good to us. Goodbye, sweeties.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.